carcasses of the wyvern looked like at Samara, the ones Ryerson so kindly delivered? Mira nods. The stones used to create them were nothing but cold, marked rocks. Stones? Do dark wielders have runes? Yes, I was there. Mira's tone sharpens. If you don't believe me, then check the wyvern you killed yesterday. And then what? I ask. Fix your wards. She pulls a leather notebook from her jacket, and my eyes widen with recognition. If you don't, they'll decline over time to nothing. Your father told me once that his research showed that Warwick never wanted anyone else to hold the power of the wards. He wanted Navarre to eternally hold the upper hand. But Lyra thought the knowledge should be shared. Warwick lied, I whisper. But about what? She hands me the journal I'd been tortured for stealing, then nails my soul to the ground with the intensity of her gaze. You have the heart of a rider, but the mind of a scribe, Violet. I'm trusting you not only to protect yourself, but to protect Mira and... She swallows hard. Brennan. I open the journal long enough to recognize the language as Meranian. My heart sinks for a second, but I close the journal, undo the buttons of my jacket, and slide it into my inner pocket. Translating this one will be all on Jacinia. Meranian is one of the dead languages I can't read. She looks longingly over my shoulder, then glances at both Mira and me in turn. You don't have to understand my choices. You simply have to survive. I love you enough to bear the weight of your disappointment. Before either of us responds, she turns on her heel and walks past Imser and disappears into the woods. Think she's full of shit? Mira asks. I think the flyers can wield. Good point. On the flight back to Erasia, Mira and I break away from formation and head for the nearest wyvern carcass within our borders. Zayden stays true to his lesson-learned proclamation and doesn't argue when we separate from the riot. A half hour and some creative knife work on Mira's part after locating the pair of wyvern bodies, Mira draws back a polished chunk of what appears to be onyx marked with a complex rune I couldn't even begin to replicate. And the damned thing is humming. Oh, shit. Is this why wyvern have suddenly reappeared? Did someone give the venin runes? As if the stone has called to its partner, the carcass 20 feet away shudders, and our heads whip toward the giant golden eye that blinks open. Fuck no, Mira whispers, drawing her sword. But I'm already an open gate to Tarn's power, and when I throw out my palms, it rips free, unleashed by my panic, lightning cracks, flashing my vision to white and hitting its mark. The blast knocks Mira and me backward, slamming us against the cold, stiff body of the wyvern behind us. Pain ripples down my spine, but everything seems to be where it's supposed to as my ass hits the ground beside my sister. We both sit in stunned silence, watching the now smoking, charred wyvern for signs of movement. You're sure lightning kills them? Mira asks after a few tense minutes. Certain, I answer. Thank Dune the Dark Wielders didn't stick around longer to see that. The cliffside would be littered with reanimating wyvern. She slowly turns her head to look at me, keeping an eye on the body. No pressure, but if you don't figure out what Warwick lied about, we're all fucked. Right, because I did such a great job the first time, and I don't even know Meranian. I'll have to rely fully on Jacinia to translate and compare the two. I draw a shaky breath. No pressure. An excerpt from The Journal of Warwick of Luceris, translated by cadets Violet Sorengale and Dane Atos. The combined hatching grounds at Besgaeth is our generation's greatest asset and our greatest liability. Chapter 58. Stubborn asshole, I mutter, turning just before the auditorium and heading to the sparring gym. Talking to Brennan has gotten me exactly nowhere over the last week, and his quick, effective dismissal of my genuine plea for him to reconsider the assembly's position on the Samara problem has my blood boiling. I push the doors open a little harder than necessary and find the sparring gym to be as empty as I'd expect at 10 at night in the middle of a weekend, and dimly lit by the cool glow of mage lights hovering above each individual mat. Zayden stands on the mat in the very center of the gym, feet apart and arms folded across his chest, wearing sparring gear and that carefully constructed mask of indifference he's known for. I thought you were kidding when I got your note. I close the door behind me, then focus on the lock and turn my hand in midair, channeling just enough power to hear the bolt slide home with a satisfying click. I haven't seen you in a week, and this is where you want to meet? He'd been sent to monitor Dreyfus right after our return from Athbeen. Figured we'd be fighting. What better place for that than the sparring gym? He stands completely still, waiting for me to come to him. His usual swords are missing, but he has two daggers strapped to his hip. You now have a warded bedroom, I remind him, stepping onto the mat. Though I'm not sure how strong those wards are, given that our method for raising Aracia's wards was obviously flawed. We now have a warded bedroom, he corrects me, his gaze sweeping over me hungrily as I walk forward, stopping only a couple of feet away from him. I can't blame him when I'm doing exactly the same, drinking in every detail of his appearance. Whether or not I'm still pissed about his latest reveal, I've missed him every minute he was gone, just like always. What exactly are we fighting about? The assembly voting to leave Navarre to fend for itself, or the secret you kept from me again? His jaw flexes. The majority voted once we returned. And though the details of that vote are classified, I'll break regulation and tell you that I lost. Oh, the sharpest edge of my anger dulls. And you'd rather discuss the second issue in here? Where anyone can walk in and hear us? Unless there's a full intrinsic around, no one can hear us like this. He gestures to the empty gym. Extending a hand, he crooks his fingers at me. Come on, I know you're pissed, and no, I don't need the bond between us to catch on to that. It's in every line of your face, the purse of your lips, the tension in your shoulders. I purposefully relax my posture. You're right, you don't need the bond. See? Still pissed. He moves so quickly, I barely have a chance to get my hands up before he sweeps my feet out from underneath me. Shit. He topples with me, bracing my fall with one hand and catching his weight with the other. The wind may not have been knocked out of me, but I'm breathless all the same. My hands brace on his chest, and his face is inches from mine, filling my vision and blocking out the world around us. I'm not sparring with you. Why? His brow knits in confusion. You have a better teacher? I have heard that Imaterio is teaching you a variety of new techniques since Venon adapt to our fighting styles so quickly. He is, but I'm not sparring with you because I really want to kick your ass. I shake my head, my braid catching slightly on the mat beneath me. Oh, you think you can hurt me? His slow grin makes me narrow my eyes. I shift a hand and whip a dagger from a sheath at my ribs, putting it against the warm skin of his throat, right along the swirling lines of his relic. I don't need to dignify that comment with a response. Fuck him. I make sure my shields are down so he hears it. His eyes flare with something that looks like pride, and he leans into the blade. I retreat, just enough that it doesn't draw blood. Guess we both just proved our point. You're capable of hurting me in ways I'm not sure you've even begun to fathom, Violet. I might be skilled enough to land a death blow, but you alone have the power to fucking destroy me. His hand slides out from behind my back to help bolster his weight. Now, we can talk here, or we can see if Sigale and Taryn are done fighting and fly through this snowstorm to the nearest vacant peak. But make no mistake, we're going to work this out. I slide the blade back into its sheath, then lift my hand to his chest again. On a sparring mat? His heart beats beneath my fingertips, strong and steady, unlike mine, which pounds like a drum. I've had a week to process, a week to wish he was around so I could yell at him, but also a week to ruminate on the logical reasons why he wouldn't have told me. The foremost of them being that he values his life. Sure as hell not in our bedroom. His knee separates mine. We don't fight in there. Since when? That's the most ludicrous thing I've ever heard. It's the only private space we have in this entire house. Since right now. I just made that rule. No fighting in our bedroom. That's not how this works. Sure it is. He drops his gaze to my mouth. We make the rules when they come to us. Go ahead. Make one. A rule? I draw my leg up, bracing my foot on the ground so I'll have leverage if I want it. But the movement also drags my inner thigh up the side of his hip. And damn if that doesn't instantly summon an ache he's in prime position to ease. Anything. We don't keep secrets. No more ask me. No more tests to see who's in and who's out of this relationship. It's full disclosure between us. I take a steadying breath and map out the golden flecks in his eyes, just in case it's the last time. Or it's nothing. Done. I'm serious. My hand slips up his chest to the juncture of his shoulder and his neck. Even though I know you were right, I wasn't asking the right questions because I was afraid of the answers. And maybe I still am, given the fact that you're never completely open with me. Almost everyone in my life has kept secrets from me because I didn't ask the right questions, didn't look further than face value. And I understand that there will be times you can't tell me everything. That's the nature of what we do as riders. But I need you to stop setting me up for failure by insisting I figure out what there is to ask. Done, he nods. A muscle in his jaw flexes. You just? My fingers slide up the warm column of his neck and into his hair. I need to know you'll be here, that no matter what happens, you'll come back so we can talk it out or fight it out. His gaze drops to my mouth, then skims over my features. My heart clenches, and I slide my hand along his chest, around his ribs, to his back. And then I hold on. Done. The lines between his brows smooth. I need you to know that no matter what information I hold, you trust me, love me enough to realize I'd never let it hurt you. I'm not the easiest person to know, but I've learned my lesson, believe me. Even if it's classified, I won't withhold any information that affects your agency. He swallows, then balances his weight on one arm and runs the back of his hand down the side of my cheek. I need to know you won't run. That you know you'll never have to. I love you, I whisper. You could throw my entire world into upheaval and I would still love you. You could keep secrets, run a revolution, frustrate the shit out of me, probably ruin me. And I would still love you. I can't make it stop. I don't want to. You're my gravity. Nothing in my world works without you. Gravity, he whispers, a slow, beautiful smile curving his mouth. The one force we can never escape, I tease. Then my smile falls. I mean it, though. I lift my brows at him. You have to let me all the way in, or all the love in the world won't hold this together. I am a person who needs information to center myself.
Done, he whispers.
Want to know about my father? My grandfather in Sigail? The rebellion? Maybe something easier.
Where's your mother?
He startles, but quickly masks the reflex.
No one talks about her, I continue. There are no paintings, no references to her being at the Caldeer executions.
Nothing. It's like you were hatched and not born.
The moment stretches between us.
She left when I was young. Their marriage contract said an heir had to survive to the age of 10, and then she was free to go, which is what she did. I haven't seen or heard from her since.
His voice sounds like he dragged it across broken glass.
Oh, my hand splays wide on his chest. I'm sorry. Now I feel like shit for asking.
I'm not, he shrugs. What else do you want to know?
Because I can't do this again. I can't go through months of uncertainty, fighting to get you back, not knowing if I've fucked up the only thing that really matters in my life.
His eyes close briefly.
Not that I won't, if that's what you need.
When did it manifest? I slide my hand up to his neck.
The signet.
About a month after the shadows did. I'd already seen Carr kill another first year for reading minds. So when it hit, I held my shit together and went to Sigail. And when Carr asked if I'd had any other strange abilities emerge, since they knew Sigail had bonded one of my relatives, I lied my ass off. And when my ability to control shadows seemed stronger than they'd expected, they had no reason to dig deeper.
A corner of his mouth tilts upward. It helps that the Rider of Record was thought to be a great uncle, not my grandfather.
She's really the only one who knows?
She is. She made me promise not to tell anyone. She thinks anyone who knows will have me killed or use me as a weapon.
Shit, isn't that exactly what I did? The second we were with Melgrin, I'd asked.
No, he whispers, lifting a hand and brushing the backs of his fingers along my cheek. You asked me for the good of the mission, but you'd never use it for personal gain.
He leans in, resting his forehead against mine.
Tell me we're all right. Tell me this didn't break us.
Promise you won't use it on me again. I hold his gaze and curl my fingers into the fabric of his shirt.
I promise, he whispers, then kisses me softly. Now, do you want your presents?
Presents? I arch my body up against his.
You lost two of your daggers fighting Solas.
I had two new ones made. A slow smile spreads across his face.
Just have to disarm me, and they're yours.
I slide my hand down his chest and do just that.
December 19th. I write the date on the next blank sheet of parchment in my notebook, then stare. We're 2 days away from solstice, and still the assembly won't budge. But it's only an 8-hour flight to Samara, so I'm holding on to the hope that we'll do the right thing.
Anything in Lyra's journal? Rhiannon asks as she slides into the seat next to me at battle brief.
Nearly every head in our squad turns toward me, and the weight of their expectations forms a pit in my stomach. It's the same question every day, and I don't have an answer.
I told you guys, once she finishes, I'll let you know.
It only took one frustrating day trying to translate and failing before I handed it over to Jacinia. I haul my new conduit out of my pack and set it in my lap. Felix gave them to every second and third year last week, and theirs are out too, the riders imbuing shiny pieces of alloy for daggers with every spare second and ounce of energy they have.
But mine has a special edition I asked him for after our battle with Solas. A strap of a bracelet to keep from losing it in combat. It's long enough to let the orb slide into my palm, but keeps it strapped to my arm in case I need to free myself for hand to hand. The flyers have been working on carving shimmering maersite arrowheads to fill their quivers as well. Over the last 2 weeks since our meeting with Melgren, the atmosphere has changed from war college to straight-up war. There's a nervous energy in the house that reminds me of the charge in the air just before a storm. All second and third years are being instructed in runes. And even I can admit, Kat is still the best of our year. She's the only one of us who's mastered a tracking rune, capable of tracking someone else's rune. Mind-blowing. Our forge is glowing non-stop to produce weapons, and every rider has been pulled from the coastal outposts and pushed to the border regions, both with Navarre and Poromiel.
"Settle down," Professor De Vera orders from the center of the stage as Brennan joins her, and the theater quickly falls quiet. "That's better."
Riddick puts his feet up on the chair ahead of him, and Rhiannon swats them down, leveling a behave or else look at him.
"What?" he grumbles, sitting up straight. "You've heard the death roll for the last week. No losses to discuss."
"As most of you know, we have no new attacks to report,"
De Vera begins, and Riddick shoots Rhi an "I told you so" raise of his brows.
"But what we do have is an updated map we think is over 90% accurate, thanks to flying patrols."
She turns toward the giant map of the continent and lifts her hands. Red flags begin moving in an undeniable pattern, pulling away from known strongholds and gathering to the east. Most settle directly across the border from Samara, while a few red flags spread out along our border.
"They've left Pavis," Riddick notes, leaning forward. "They've left everywhere in the south,"
Sawyer adds.
"And the Tirish border, too."
The north, in the provinces of Signesen and Breivik, is still spattered with red.
"But not Zolia,"
Marin sighs a few seats down on the left, and Kat presses her lips in a tight line next to her. They obviously don't know our wards aren't operating at full strength.
"What can you ascertain from their reported movements?"
De Vera asks, turning back around to face us. Brennan folds his arms in front of his chest and looks down at his feet before lifting his gaze to us.
I know that look. He's feeling guilty. Good.
"They're preparing for the battle Melgren foresaw," a rider from Third Wing calls out.
At least the Assembly isn't keeping Melgren's request a secret. Just how they individually voted in regard to taking action on it.
"Agreed," De Vera says, nodding in his direction. "It's hard to get an accurate count, but we estimate upward of 500 wyvern."
She glances at Brennan and, when he doesn't speak, continues.
"And there are dark wielders among them."
A litany of swear words is mumbled throughout the theater.
"And why is it we're not engaging?"
someone from First Wing asks.
"Because we're spiteful," Quinn says from behind me.
"What was that, cadet?"
De Vera calls her out. Quinn shifts in her seat, but when I glance back, her head is held high.
"I said because we're spiteful," she repeats louder this time.
"Nailed it," Rhi says under her breath.
Brennan clears his throat.
"We're not engaging because the Assembly voted and decided that the casualty rate among riders and flyers would be far too great. A battle this size could annihilate our forces, leaving the rest of the continent undefended."
I shake my head at just how familiar that reasoning sounds.
"Some of us have family in Navarre,"
Avalyn says, a row in front of me with the other first years in our squad.
"Are we supposed to just sit back and wait to hear if they die?"
"They should have left," a rider retorts from somewhere in the vicinity of Second Wing. Not everyone has the means to pick up their entire lives and move just because a war is coming, you elitist prick, Avalyn counters, her voice rising.
She has a point. And the mutters of agreement throughout the wings rise in volume and pitch.
This is not what battle brief is for, Devera shouts.
We quiet down, but the energy has shifted. And it's not in a positive direction.
Let's spin this another way, Brennan says. If you were Melgrin, what would you be doing right now?
Shitting myself, Riddick answers. Brennan rubs the bridge of his nose.
Other than that? Bolstering the wards, Rhiannon offers. As long as they remain at full power, this is all just bluster on the part of the enemy.
Excellent point, Cadet Mateus, Brennan nods.
So he has to choose between arming his forces or keeping the power supply concentrated in the armory?
That question comes out of First Wing.
Another excellent point, Brennan agrees. What's the problem with arming the forces?
Spreading out the daggers lessens the efficacy as a power supply for the wards, Rhiannon replies. Even if the energy isn't actively being spent killing dark wielders, the wards are still weaker.
Right. Brennan looks straight at me. And what would you choose to do, Cadet Sorengale?
Besides actually fight to defend innocent civilians?
The words are out of my mouth before I can think twice about calling my brother out in public.
If you were Melgrin. His head tilts, and from that look, I know I'm going to get the mother of all lectures after this.
I study the map for a heartbeat.
I'd have pulled every dagger from the coastal outposts to reinforce and boost the power supplies at the border outposts. They're powerless once they cross the wards. Wyvern die, Venon can't channel. That leaves them with hand-to-hand combat.
Or artillery, Kat adds.
Exactly, I glance at her and nod. As long as the Novarian forces can physically repel the Dark Wielders and keep them from scattering the power supply in the armory, then there's no real danger of incursion.
And that's exactly my point.
But Melgrin saw them being defeated, a flyer from Second Wing says.
Let's run with that thought, Devera gestures at the map. Should the wards at Samara fall, what would happen?
They'd have a direct line to the hatching ground? Someone answers.
No, I reply. That portion of the wards would fall back to its natural distance, about a 3 or 4 hour flight from Besgaeth, just like ours. The power supplies in the outposts extend the wards. They don't create them. So while a large piece of Navar would be unprotected,
blinking my gaze finds my brother's. He nods. Melgrin was bluffing. Banking on us not fully understanding how the wards work. He used a scare tactic to get us to agree to fight.
Did you want to finish that thought, Cadet? Devera asks.
My mind spins as my heart lurches into my throat. I stare at the map, at the thin line of the border that remains uncrossed by what appears to be an undefeatable legion of the enemy. And a thought so terrifying I can barely reach for it begins to take hold.
How old is this information?
I'm sorry, Devera's brows rise.
How long have they been sitting on the border?
I clarify, my nails biting into the palms of my hands as I tighten my fists, pushing down the fear threatening to consume me. She glances at Brennan, who replies,
They've been there for 3 days. This morning's report confirms they haven't moved.
Oh, gods.
We act now,
Tarn's voice rumbles through my head. I stuff everything into my bag as Devera calls on another rider to answer a question.
What are you doing?
Rhi asks in a whisper, and I notice almost every member of my squad has turned to watch. I need to find Zayden. I sling my pack over my shoulders and slip my arms through the straps, preparing to stand.
It's not Samara.
All right, Rhiannon puts her things away and the rest of the squad follows her lead. We're coming with you.
There's no time to argue, so I nod and we all file out, earning us a few shouted protests from De Vera. But the sound only blurs into the roaring in my ears as my thoughts spin faster and faster. The hallway is relatively empty, since every cadet is at battle brief, making for a quick exit from the western wing of the house. Where are you? I ask down the bond.
In a strategy meeting in the assembly chamber, Zayden answers. Why?
I'm headed your way. I need you.
We pass the doors to the history classroom and then the great hall.
Is anyone going to tell us why we just walked out of battle brief?
Kat asks, a few steps behind me.
Violet has a look in her eyes, Rhiannon explains, keeping up at my side.
The same one she had before the squad battle last year, Sawyer says.
She's onto something, and from our experience, you just roll with it, Rhiannon finishes.
Zayden walks out of the assembly chamber and heads straight for me, meeting us in the middle of the hallway.
What's wrong?
It's not Samara we have to worry about.
Why?
He keeps his eyes on me, despite the shuffling of my squad mates.
Because they're sitting there waiting, I explain. They've been waiting for 3 days. Why?
If I knew their thought process, this war would be over, he replies.
Melgren says they're overrun on Solstice. That's the day after tomorrow.
Gods, we have to move quickly.
He nods.
Wyvern aren't going to take down the wards at Samara. They can't fly past them. Plus, smaller hordes were moved along the full border. I think Samara is just a distraction. I think they're waiting for them all to fall.
His eyes flare for a heartbeat. The battle can't take place somewhere else, Sawyer argues. Melgren would see it.
Not if we're there, Sloane counters. Melgren can't see the outcome if 3 of us are there, remember?
She holds up her forearm where her relic winds above the edge of her sleeve.
Exactly. My fingernails bite into my palms. He can't see the real fight if we're there. He has all his forces concentrating on Samara when they should be...
At Besgaeth. Zayden finishes my thought, his eyes searching mine.
The veil.
Yes.
Do you want to go back? He asks.
Of course we do, Riddick answers.
I wasn't asking you. Zayden holds my gaze. Do you want to go?
Do I? Navarre has lied to their people, lied to us for 600 years.
They would never come to our aid, Sloane says. They've definitely never come to ours,
Kat agrees.
They've let Peromish civilians die time and again, safely tucked behind their wards, pulling the blindfold over Navarrean citizens' lives.
The hatching grounds are there, Rhiannon argues.
We have our own here, Traeger counters. At least I think it's Traeger, since I can't seem to look away from Zayden.
He's the stable ground beneath my feet as my mind spins faster and faster, my squad mates voicing contradicting opinions that match my own thoughts.
My family is in Moraine, Avalyn pleads.
The voices behind me blur as they truly begin to argue.
We'd have to leave almost immediately, Zayden says, his voice cutting through the noise.
They lied to us, executed your father, tortured me. I force myself to stop counting their transgressions before they overwhelm my conscience.
Yes.
I keep thinking about the infantry cadets and the healers and even the scribes. People like Kaori stayed behind, those who just want to defend their homeland.
Reaching forward, I grasp onto his arms to hold steady as the argument rages around us, and I get the distinct impression by the increase in volume that we're not the only squad out here anymore.
Yes.
If we don't go, we're no better than they are, leaving their civilians to die, when we might be the very weapons they need.
My grip tightens on him.
Do you want to fight? He asks, leaning down as the argument lessens around us, everyone waiting to hear what I say next, probably.
Say the word, and I'll take it to the assembly. And if they won't support it, we'll go with whomever will. I go wherever you go.
The thought of risking my friends, losing them, has my stomach churning. I don't want to put Taranen and Darna into danger. I would rather die than gamble with Zayden's life. But is there really a choice? Going might risk death. But staying risks us becoming just like our enemy.
We have to.
An excerpt from
Tern's personal addendum to the Book of Brennan, as quoted by Cadet Violet Sorengale.
We do not eat our allies.
Chapter 59.
I can make it on my own, Andarna argues 3 hours later as cadets scurry into our hasty and unauthorized formation in the center of the valley.
It's an 18-hour flight, I remind her, checking all the joints of her new harness. Thank gods she's still only half the size of Sigale now, so Tern can still carry her. I respect your decision to come, but this is the only way. She can only fly for an hour or two before her wing muscle completely cramps.
And you think I should be carried like a juvenile?
She huffs a breath of steam as I walk underneath her and fit my fingers between her scales and the smooth metal that curves under her shoulders. I think Tern is capable of bearing your weight. You can fly until you tire or hold back the riot, but wearing a harness for quick clipping in is the only way I'm letting you come. I'm not risking you getting left behind if you fall out of formation. I tug at the steel just to be sure it doesn't give like mine did when we flew back to Besgaeth last summer. I get it, you don't want to be carried. Sometimes I don't want to fly in a saddle, but it's what I need in order to ride. It's your choice. You can come back in the harness, or you can stay behind.
Dragons do not answer to humans, she bristles, straightening her posture.
No, but they do answer to their elders, Tern grunts, his claws flexing in the green grass beside us.
Only to the eldest of our den, she counters as I walk out from under her,
careful not to step on my flight jacket and pack that I've left on the ground. It's too damn hot up here to be dressed for the reality of December.
Sure, I'll just go ask Coda really quick, I quip sarcastically, jumping backward when a griffin barrels by at full speed.
They might be slower than dragons in the sky, but they're frighteningly fast on the ground. They're also less than happy about being left behind, according to Marin.
Try not to get killed before we get there, Vi. I think we might need you.
Riddick teases from my left, waiting in front of Atrum, who snaps at the next griffin who races by a little too close. I half expect to see feathers fall from between his teeth when he draws back his head.
Perhaps I will be the eldest of my own den.
Andarna arches her neck, tracking a flock of birds in the sky. I follow her line of sight and quickly look away when the brightness of the sun stings my eyes, burning into my vision for a second and making her scales look a shiny sky blue before I blink the spots away.
I'm still in my middling years, Tern grumbles. You'll be waiting a while.
Really?
She shimmies the harness into a more comfortable position.
I figured you were decades into your elder era. You certainly act like it.
Tern turns his head slowly, his eyes narrowing on Andarna.
You don't act a day over 100, I reassure Tern, then offer a smile to Marin as she approaches with Kat.
I hate that we can't come, Marin says, swinging her leather rucksack from her shoulders. We're supposed to stick together as a squad, right?
You wouldn't be able to wield, I remind her as she crouches, digging through her pack.
The second you cross Navarian wards, you'd be defenseless and targeted by riders and Venon alike. That's not a great combination.
And we'd slow you down. We've heard it.
Kat folds her arms in front of her chest, surveying the chaos as Fierge lands ahead of us, flaring her wings before touching down near Rhiannon.
Doesn't mean we don't feel like shit that you're all rushing off to battle while we study.
I'm not so sure about the study part, since I think that's Devera's red club tail up there,
Riddick adds, pointing toward the head of the formation.
Here,
Marin pulls out a small crossbow and leather-capped quiver from her pack, then stands.
Hate to tell you this, but you're awful with a longbow.
Thanks?
This will give you a secondary weapon if you run out of daggers. Just pull back the string until it catches here, then knock the arrow in the flight groove.
She points to the center of the bow.
And pull the lever with your forefinger.
It's compact and won't take too much strength to operate. The gesture is so kind that a lump grows in my throat. It's perfect. Thank you. I take the weapon from her, but she pulls the quiver just out of reach. These are all Maosite arrowheads, imbued and ruined to explode on impact. She lifts her dark brows. They're cushioned in the quiver, but do not drop this. Got it. I take the quiver from her, then slip them both into my pack. The assembly won't budge, Zayden says. He's dressed in full flight gear, his sword strapped across his back as he walks with my siblings. Stubborn assholes. Mira's also dressed for flight, her sword sheathed at her side. But Brennan isn't, and the anger simmering in my brother's narrowed gaze is aimed straight at me. They won't fight, even knowing the hatching grounds are at risk? Riddick challenges, heading our way with Sawyer, Imogen, and Quinn. They think we're wrong, Zayden answers. They think that rushing into enemy territory with untrained cadets is a mistake, Brennan snaps, and I agree. You're going to get cadets, including yourself, killed. It's not like we're taking the first years, Rhiannon says, fastening the straps of sheaths around her flight jacket. Which is bullshit, Arik bites out. Sloane and the other first years walking up with him, all wearing flight leathers and determination. We have just as much right to defend the hatching grounds as second and third years. The pleading yet accusatory look he gives me sinks my heart. He has just as much right, maybe more so, to defend Navarre as anyone here. None of you are going, Brennan starts. You'd rather stay here knowing there's every chance Mom will die? I step toward my brother, and Mira pivots to my side, facing Brennan. He flinches, his head drawing back like I hit him. She had no trouble sending any of the three of us to our deaths. Brennan's gaze jumps between Mira and me, looking for understanding that neither of us gives him. We don't have time for this, Zayden lectures. If you aren't coming, Brennan, then that's on you. But if we don't leave now, there's a chance we'll be too late to defend Bezgaeth. He turns, pointing a finger at the first years. And absolutely not. Most of you haven't even manifested a signet, and I'm not serving you up with your dragons as another energy source.
I've manifested, Sloane protests, grasping the straps of her rucksack.
And you're still a first year, Zayden counters. Mateus, get your squad ready to launch, then find your wing leader for further orders. We'll need to fly straight through. I'll take Violet with the...
With all due respect, Rhiannon straightens her posture and stares him down. Unlike war games, Second Squad Flame Section Fourth Wing will remain intact, though you're welcome to join us.
Sawyer and Riddick move to my sides, and I know if I fall back, Quinn and Imogen will be there waiting.
Zayden lifts his scarred brow at me, and instead of contradicting Rhiannon, I glance at my sister. Same goes for you. You're welcome to join, but I stay with my squad.
The wind blows bitterly cold against my face nearly 18 hours later as we cross into the Moraine province and follow the Jacobus River through the winding mountain range that leads to Bezgaeth. I've never been so thankful that my body heats when I channel. Everyone else in our party must be frozen to the core. It's a testament to General Melgrin's certainty about Samara that we aren't stopped by any patrols, because there are none. Even the Midgard posts are devoid of riders as we fly over in a riot of 50 led by Taryn and Sigail. We may have left the first years behind, but we also gained some of the active riders who hadn't been stationed along the cliffside border, like Mira, who's flying with Tiny directly behind me as if she's scared to let me out of her sight.
I'm sir is indeed within the veil. Tiny will relay communications for the squad while you locate your mother.
Taryn finishes telling me the plan devised by leadership mid-flight that will allow us to recon, then adjust to whatever we find waiting for us. My assigned task is to get through to my mother. No pressure or anything.
When we reach the upcoming bend in the river, you'll release your harness from mine, Taryn tells Endarna, Fly to the Vale and stay there.
An adolescent black dragon will raise human suspicion at Basgaiath. Hide among our kind until it's over.
What if you need me, like last time? I can stay hidden right at your side.
My heart clenches at the memory of how she'd appeared on the battlefield, even after I'd begged her to stay hidden. She'd risked her life to help us and nearly lost it in the process. Stay with the Feathertails. They'll need all your protection if the wards fall. And report anything the second it feels off.
If we're too late, then gods help us all.
At the bend in the river, Andarna detaches and flies alongside us until the beats of her smaller wings can't keep up, then dives toward the ice-crusted river beneath us.
The Vale, I remind her.
I will be where I am needed, she counters, banking left, leaving the trail of the river in favor of the snow-capped ridgeline that leads back behind the flight field and up into the Vale.
That didn't sound like she intends on listening, I tell Tarn, watching her until she fades from view.
I warned you what adolescents are like.
He tucks his wings and dives, leaving my stomach behind as we drop 1,000 feet in altitude in a matter of breaths, then levels out once we're only 100 feet above the tall oak trees that line the river, approaching Basgaiath from the south. Everything looks as it should in the dying evening light, identical to when we left 6 weeks ago, simply covered in a fresh coat of snow. I look over my shoulder to see half the riot, first, second, and third wings, break off, heading toward the flight field. As long as everyone sticks to the plan, the next quarter will land in the courtyard of the quadrant while the rest of us continue onto the main campus.
Can you sense anything off? I ask as the walls of the Rider's Quadrant come into view.
Only half the windows in the dormitory are lit from within. An ache settles in my chest. No matter what cruelty transpired here, there's an enormous part of me that considers this place home. It's where I studied, where I climbed trees with Dane, and where my father taught me the wonder of the archives. It's where I fell in love with Zayden and learned just how much had been omitted from those very archives.
The wards are still up. We've made our presence known to the Empyrean, and I can definitely sense their displeasure, if that's what you mean.
We cross over the courtyard, and tail and claw sections peel off the formation, with Devera in the lead, causing untold damage to the masonry as they land wherever they'll fit along the walls.
But Grime is in residence, and she's reaching out to her mate, who is at Samara to contact Coda.
At what point will you and Sigale be able to cover distances like that?
We pass the parapet in nothing more than a heartbeat, and then Tarn banks left.
Years. Grime and Maze have been mated for many decades.
He races over the bell tower of the main college of Basgaiath, then flares his wings and beats them backward, halting our momentum to the sound of alarmed cries from the watchmen in the four towers, shouting down their warnings.
There are people down there, I tell him as he sinks gracefully into the main campus's courtyard.
They'll move.
Sure enough, people scurry, scattering out of his way as he lands.
Should you change your mind, I'll simply claw through the roof to reach you.
I unbuckle quickly, unstrap the bag of daggers I was assigned to carry, each of us has one, and climb out of the saddle. I'll be all right, I promise, working to his shoulder without so much as removing my flight goggles or tightening the straps on my pack. Speed matters, since only one dragon can land here at a time. I'll be alone until Sigale follows. My muscles protest the sudden movement after hours of riding, but I make it to his shoulder, then slide down the familiar ridges of his scales until my feet touch ground at Basgaiath. The second I'm clear, slipping the strap of my bag to my shoulder, Tarn launches skyward. He's strong but also heavy, and his talons barely clear the roof line of the infantry quadrant as he flies off. Officers stand in stunned silence against the walls, staring at me with blatant shock, and I open the archives doors just a crack to fill my body with enough energy to wield just in case one of them decides to make a move. Hands up, I scan the threats around me,
taking note of the one captain in navy blue reaching for his sword. I retreat toward the wall beside the stairs leading up to the administration building until I feel frozen stone against my back. Sigail lands an instant later, momentarily obscuring my view of my would-be enemies, and Zayden dismounts, shadows in one hand and a sword in the other as he echoes my previous movements, giving only me his back as he retreats to my side. When Sigail launches from the courtyard, Tiny sweeps down, taking her place in perfectly timed coordination. Movement up the stairs catches my attention, and I pivot, putting myself between Zayden and my mother as she descends with slow, deliberate steps, her hand on the hilt of her sheathed short sword, Nolan a few steps behind her.
Here we go.
Shadows stream around me, racing across the cobblestones and stopping at the first step just as my mother reaches it. Her sigh is pure annoyance, and twin bruises lie in half circles beneath the eyes she narrows at us. Mom, power crackles, lifting the loose tendrils of my hair as I glance back at the man who helped hold me prisoner.
Really, Violet, you couldn't use the front door?
She glances at Mira, and then her gaze turns upward as Kath descends. Her face falls, but she holds her posture rigid as ever.
He's not with us, Mira says, holding her sword pointed at the captain who's been working his way out. In fact, he's pretty pissed we came.
Mom's head tilts slightly in a movement I know means she's talking to Imser.
Seems we've been fully invaded. We're not here to fight you. We're here to fight for you, I tell her. You might not believe me, but your wards are in danger.
Our wards are perfectly fine, as I'm sure you can feel. Mom crosses her arms as Dane joins us. Oh, for fuck's sake, she calls across the courtyard.
Holland, open the damned gates before one of these dragons takes off the roof.
She looks pointedly at the shadows blocking her path. They lift, retreating to the tips of my boots.
Let the others know the gates are opening, I tell Taryn. I will position myself accordingly.
A full minute later, the guards throw open the gates, revealing the rest of our squad dismounting.
Trust me, Mom. The battle you're expecting isn't at Samara, it's here.
I explain my line of thinking in the few minutes it takes for my squad mates to reach us.
Someone is going to take down your wards.
Not possible, Cadet.
She shakes her head as night descends in true around us.
They're heavily guarded every moment of every day. The biggest threat to the wards would be you. Let us check, Zayden says at my back. You know your daughters would never strip Navarre of its protection.
I know exactly who my daughters are, and the answer is no.
Her dismissal is curt. You're lucky to be alive crossing enemy airspace. Consider retaining your lives a personal gift.
I think not.
Mira's gaze sweeps the courtyard. This courtyard should be full at this hour with soldiers returning from mess, and yet I only count 5 soldiers, 1 captain and 4 cadets, and no, I'm not counting the healers in the corner.
You've sent every available body to Samara, haven't you?
The temperature in the courtyard plummets from freezing to nearly unbreathable.
The guards behind you have signets and mind work, Mother. In fact, I'd bet money that the most powerful writers on campus are you and...
Who? Professor Carr? Mira moves forward fearlessly.
Our forces can render aid or conquer. It's your choice.
Mom's nostrils flare as 10 seconds pass.
If you won't take them to the wards, Dane says from somewhere behind me, I will. My father showed me where they are last year,
which is precisely why he's with our squad.
Who do you want to be? The general who saves Besgaeth, or the one who loses it to the very cadets who rejected your lies?
I lift my chin.
Black really does suit you, Violet.
It might be the nicest thing she's ever said to me.
Like Captain Soren Gale said, it's your choice. We're wasting time, I retort.
With night fallen, it's officially solstice. Mom's gaze jumps to Mira, then slides back to me.
By all means, let's inspect the wards.
My shoulders dip in relief, but I keep my power at the ready as we climb the steps into the administration building, swallowing the knot of apprehension in my throat as we approach Nolan.
Violet, he starts. Just the sound of his voice makes bile rise in my throat. Stay the fuck away from Violet, and I'll consider letting you live, if only to mend riders, if there's a battle coming.
Zayden warns the mender as we pass him near the entryway. Mage lights glow above our heads as we walk into the familiar halls, a pair of healers scurrying by, coming from the direction of the mess hall where another group of cadets in pale blue peer out of the doorway.
Crod is worried,
Taren remarks, his voice tense.
What would Garrick's dragon be worried about?
Zayden asks on the pathway shared by all four of us.
Runes, Sigale answers.
That's right. The brown scorpion tail found the lure in Resin because he's highly sensitive to them. Besgaeth was built on runes, I remind them.
This is different. He senses the same energy that he detected in Resin.
Taren's tone shifts.
His rider officially has control of the dormitory with Devera.
Garrick's in place. Mom leads us down the hallway and into the northwest turret, then descends the spiral staircase that reminds me so much of its southern counterpart that my breath catches at the scent of earth.
Drip. Drip. Drip.
I hear the sound in my mind as clearly as if it were real, as if I were back in that interrogation chamber. Zayden's hand takes mine, lacing his fingers through my own.
You all right?
He asks. Shadows wrapping around our joined hands, their touch as soft as velvet. For a second, I debate playing it off, but I was the one who demanded full disclosure, so it only seems fair that I give it.
It smells like the interrogation chamber. We'll set that room on fire before we leave,
he promises. At the base of the stairwell is nothing, just a circular room paved with the foundation stones. Mom looks to Dane, and he walks past her, examining the pattern, then pushing on a rectangular stone at his shoulder height. It gives, and stone scrapes stone, as a door swings open in the masonry, revealing a mage-lit tunnel so cramped it would give even the bravest person claustrophobia.
Just like the archives,
I tell Zayden. Mom orders her accompanying soldiers to stand guard. In return, Rhiannon orders Sawyer and Imogen to guard them as we walk into the tunnel. Mom goes first.
What happened to being guarded?
Zayden asks, walking ahead of me. Mira's at my back.
The wards are guarded, she says, turning sideways when the tunnel narrows even farther.
Wouldn't you find it suspicious if guards were stationed at the bottom of an empty stairwell? She challenges. Sometimes the best defense is simple camouflage.
I walk sideways, breathing in through my nose and out through my mouth, and try to pretend I'm somewhere, anywhere else.
We're going to have fun, you and I.
Varish's words slide over me and my heart rate jumps. Zayden's shadows expand from our hands to my waist, and the pressure there feels like his arm is around me, making it bearable to get through the passage for the 20 feet it takes to open up wide again. The tunnel runs for what looks like another 50 yards before ending at a glowing blue archway, and the hum of energy from what I assume is the wardstone vibrates my very bones, tenfold the intensity of the one at Aracia.
See? It's guard.
Mom's words die, and we see them the same moment she does. Two bodies in black uniforms lie on the ground, pools of their blood slowly expanding toward each other. Their eyes are open, but they're glazed and vacant, freshly dead.
My heart lurches as the shadows fall away with Zayden's hand as we both reach for weapons.
Oh, shit, Riddick whispers as the others file through the bottleneck behind us, drawing swords, daggers, and battle axes.
Metal slides against metal as Mom pulls her sword, then breaks into a run, sprinting down the tunnel.
No chance you'd stay here if I... Zayden starts.
None, I say over my shoulder, already racing after my mother down the long expanse. The vague sound of barked orders echoes off the tunnel walls as Mira catches up quickly, then passes me to run at my mother's side while Zayden keeps pace with me.
Do you know where the ward chamber opens to the sky? I ask Taryn as my boots pound the stone floor of the corridor. It has to, if it's constructed anything like Aracia.
According to you, I cannot supply fire to more than one.
He pauses as though taking stock of my situation.
On my way.
No! Mom's shout sends chills down my spine as she and Mira make it to the chamber ahead of us, both charging left, weapons high. The rest of us reach the chamber, and before I can assess the situation, Zayden's shadows jerk me off my feet and into his chest as he spins us backward, pressing my spine against the wall of the archway as the points of an orange's scorpion tail swing through the very place I'd been standing. There's a fucking dragon in there? Are you? His eyes fly wide. Didn't get me, I assure him. He nods, relief shifting my gaze from worried to alert, and we both turn into the entrance, quickly joined by Riddick, Rhiannon, and Dane. My mouth drops, and power charges through my veins, so potent my hands buzz. The wardstone is twice as large as the one in Aracia, as in the chamber that houses it. But unlike Aracia's, the rings and runes carved into it are interrupted by a diamond pattern. And unlike our wards in Aracia, this wardstone is on fire, lit on top by black flames that sputter and flare as a dragon emerges from behind the left side of the stone, driving Mom and Mira back toward us. Not just any dragon. Bade!
Get out of there!
Taryn orders as Bade lowers her head, and I get a single glimpse of her eyes, opaque instead of golden. Before Mom charges toward her nose, lifting her sword to swing. Bade knocks her aside with a single swipe of her head, and Mom flies into the stone wall of the chamber, cracking her head before falling into a heap. Zayden throws his hand out, and shadows stream past, grasping both Mira and Mom, pulling them back to us as Bade roars, steam and spit flying from her mouth. She stalks forward, her talons clicking on the floor as she maneuvers around the stone, revealing Jack Barlow in his seat on Bade's back. The smile he gives me twists my stomach.
You're right on time, Soren Gale.
Anytime you want to show up would be very appreciated, I tell Taryn as Zayden's shadows release Mira at my side, but drag my mother's unconscious body back through the archway. I can't wield in here, not without endangering everyone. Besides, the charge of the stone would draw every strike to it.
It's not exactly an easy location to get to,
Taryn growls in reply.
What the hell are you doing, Barlow?
Dane snaps.
What I promised,
he answers, glee shining in his eyes. Zayden sends another stream of shadows, this one shooting toward Barlow, and Bade drops her jaw, her eerie eyes flashing as fire glows up her throat. Zayden! I yell as Riddick pushes past me, past all of us, and throws his arms forward, palms out. Get down! Riddick shouts, and I glimpse a wall of ice rising before us as Zayden pulls me into the shelter of his body and crouches. The chamber glows orange for a heartbeat, then two, as fire rages against the stone walls. Riddick screams as the blast dies. The second the fire ceases, we're on our feet to face Barlow and Bade, but the dragon has disappeared behind the wardstone again. I've got him! Rhiannon rushes forward and hooks her arm under Riddick's, then hauls him back from where only a puddle marks where the wall of ice had stood. Nothing prepares me for the sight of Riddick's burned hands, blistered and bleeding.
We'll take the left, Zayden says, glancing at me.
Taking right, Dane agrees, shooting a look at Mira, who nods. Zayden and I run to the left, and I flip the dagger in my hand, pinching it by the tip in readiness to throw as we round the corner. What the fuck? Bade is up on her back legs, her front claws grasping the top of the flaming wardstone, and Barlow isn't in his seat. It takes a precious second we don't have to spot him holding on to the top of Bade's neck, clutching one of her horns. Not even Zayden is fast enough to stop the downward plunge of Jack's short sword between the scales alongside Bade's neck. The dragon's cry shakes the foundation of the chamber and stops abruptly when Jack pushes the blade all the way through the front of her throat. Jack's head swings in our direction, and he wields an outward-facing palm, throwing a shield that deflects Zayden's shadows as blood sprays from Bade's throat onto the wardstone. The black flames extinguish an instant before Bade collapses, her weight pitching forward. The wardstone tips, and Jack fumbles to hold on, giving me the perfect opportunity to flick my wrist and release the dagger.
I hear a satisfying cry as Zayden grabs hold of my waist, throwing up a wall of shadow that blocks out the chamber around us, but doesn't shield us from the noise of the stone crashing, cracking. The humming stops. The wards have fallen.
An excerpt from Magic, A Universal Study for Writers by Colonel Emmazine Ruthorn. At its core, magic demands balance. Whatever you take will be recouped, and it is not the wielder who determines the price. Chapter 60. Zayden drops the shadows, and we both turn at the same time to survey the damage. My heart seizes, and I reach out for Zayden's hand reflexively. The ward stone lies in two pieces on the ground, and there isn't a flame in sight. Holy Dune, Navarre is defenseless. There's no seeing over Bade's body to check on Mira, so I whip my gaze to the right, meeting Rhiannon's wide eyes where she stands at the front of the archway, protecting Riddick and my mother. Jack stumbles backward from the blow of my dagger, a dazed but elated look twisting his face as he wrenches it from his shoulder and drops it to the floor. He only has minutes, I whisper to Zayden. Barlow has just killed his own dragon. It's unfathomable, impossible. And yet Bade is most certainly dead as Jack falls to his knees and laughs up at the sky 50 feet above us. Mira appears, moving silently around Bade's corpse, and Zayden gives her a subtle shake of his head when she lifts her sword. She keeps it poised for attack, but doesn't continue forward.
You know you're about to join your dragon, don't you? Zayden asks, his voice low as shadows move in riotous swirls at our feet.
What are you doing?
I palm another dagger. Getting whatever information we can. The utter calmness of his tone is unnerving.
That's the thing, Barlow says, his blonde hair covering his forehead as he falls forward onto a hand.
I'm not. They have us thinking we're the inferior species. But did you see how easily I controlled her? How easily the energy she bonded us with is replaced?
His eyes slide shut as his fingers splay on the stone.
Jack, don't do this! Nolan storms past Rhiannon, his features slackening when he takes in the destruction around him.
You're better than this! You can choose!
My chest tightens. The way he said that is almost like he expected this.
Because he did, Zayden answers, his gaze locked on Jack. He wants to mend him. He's been trying to mend him since May. He's too weak to shield his intentions now.
Mend what? The injuries from the fall?
Zayden's brow furrows in concentration.
Jax turned venom. Somehow he managed it within the wards.
I think I might be sick.
There is no choice, Jax shouts. And if there was, I made mine the second I saw her.
He shoots a glare my way.
Bond, the most powerful dragon available at threshing. Why should they determine our potential when we're capable of reaching for fate all on our own?
Oh, gods. His eyes have been bloodshot for so long. When did it happen? Before the fall. It had to have been before I wielded that first time back in the gym that day.
And I've thrown the wrong dagger.
Bade.
Taren growls, and I glance up to see his silhouette block out the stars far above us.
I'm so sorry.
Magic requires balance, Nolan argues. It does not give without a price.
Does it?
Jack inhales, and the stones around him turn from a dark slate gray to a dusky beige.
Do you understand how much power is beneath your feet?
One block pales, then another, and another.
Zayden,
I know.
Shadows shoot forward, knocking Jack backward and driving him across the floor before lifting him from the ground, pinning him in midair with an X across his torso.
When did you turn? Zayden asks. Wouldn't you like to know?
Jack fights the binding, but Zayden closes his fist and the shadows snap even tighter.
I know you're going to tell me, Zayden walks forward, because I have nothing to lose by killing you.
So tell me when. Earn yourself a little goodwill.
Before his challenge against me, I answer when Jack refuses to. He forced power into my body. I just didn't recognize it for what it is.
How? The wards do not block all power like the dragons want you to think they do. We can still feed from the ground, still channel enough to survive, enough to fool them.
We might not be at full strength, capable of wielding greater magic under your protections.
But make no mistake, we are already among you, and now we're free.
Jack gestures at Bade, his glare alternating between Zayden and me.
I'll never know why it's you he wants. What the fuck makes you so special?
This changes everything,
Taren urges.
You have no idea what's coming for you.
Jack grasps at the shadows, his feet kicking against only air, but Zayden wraps another band around his throat and he stills.
They're faster than you think they are. He's coming with a horde of greens. They all are.
Might take them a minute to read the map. Zayden's tone shifts to taunting, and you'll be long gone before they arrive.
We need to keep him alive for questioning as long as possible.
I shift my weight carefully to avoid Jack's attention.
And what's your solution for that?
Zayden asks. We have to cut him off from his power. My gaze swings wide, and I see Nolan creeping up on the left. He's kept him under control all these...
The serum,
I tell Zayden.
He must be why they developed the signet-blocking serum.
Motion near Mira makes me glance her way as Dane edges past her.
They don't need a map, not when I showed them the way. While you were busy smuggling weapons out, we were busy smuggling them in.
Jack's motions grow weaker, his breaths more labored, just as Liam's had been.
This whole place will be ours in a matter of hours.
He splays his palms wide and reaches the wall, then shudders as color leaches from the stone.
My heart jolts. We're underground.
Zayden pulls his alloy-hilted dagger and strides forward, but Dane gets there faster.
Not yet!
Dane grabs hold of Jack's head and closes his eyes as stone after stone loses its color.
One, two, three. I start to count heartbeats as the desiccation expands.
On the fourth beat, Jack wrenches his hands from the wall and grasps Dane's forearms.
Zayden! It's a request and we both know it, but he doesn't act.
Dane begins to tremble.
Zayden! I shout. Jack's draining him!
Power ripples up from my fingertips, ready to strike. Only when Dane screams in pain does Zayden take the final step and slam the hilt of the dagger against Jack's temple, knocking him unconscious. I rush to Dane as he stumbles backward, ripping at his flight jacket, tugging it off and shoving the fabric of his uniform up his arms to reveal a matching set of gray handprints burned into his skin in the same place where Jack grabbed him. Are you all right?
God, the skin is crinkling.
I think so. Dane runs his hands down his arms in turn, then flexes his fingers in appraisal.
Hurts like a fucking ice burn.
I'm assuming you know what to do with him, seeing as you've been doing it since May. Zayden shoots Nolan a withering look. Nolan nods, reaching Jack and pouring a vial of serum into his mouth. Zayden withdraws his shadows, allowing Jack to crumble to the floor, then leans over and cuts away Jack's first wing patch.
How many riders are here?
Dane asks Nolan, who stares at Jack with a mix of disbelief and horror. Suddenly, I understand why he was always so exhausted this year. He wasn't mending a soul in the figurative sense, but the literal.
How many riders, Nolan?
Dane snaps. The mender lifts his tired gaze.
119 cadets.
My mother answers, holding her hand to her bleeding head.
10 leadership. The rest have all been sent to Midland Posts and Samara.